listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. Hosted by high-stakes headhunter, author, and professional speaker, Scott Love.
You're listening to the Rainmaking Podcast, and my name is Scott Love. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. I'm excited about our topic today, and let me give you a little bit of insight. Years ago, I did a lot of training to recruiting and staffing companies, and I still do some, but not like I did before when I had a full-on global training company niched within the recruiting and staffing industry. And so much of performance in business can be described as performance in athletics. And I would use sports metaphors to teach people the essence of real achievement. And one thing that I've noticed is that every high-performing athlete always says that their state is what impacts performance. It means their emotional state has a direct impact on one's performance on the athletic field. And the same thing can be said in business development. Our topic today is mental health and the economic impact on rainmakers. And we're talking with Renee Branson, who's a mental health expert. She's a certified resilience coach with a master's degree in counseling psychology. And she works with her clients, law firms, other professional organizations, to give them usable tools to increase resilience, well-being, and optimism in the workplace. And as you know, all those things definitely impact the bottom line. And I think the stigma of talking about mental health isn't what it once was years ago. So I'm really excited to bring this very special program to you. I hope that all of you listen to it, and I know that it's going to make a lot of sense and give you some helpful ideas. Make sure you connect with Renee. I'm going to put her LinkedIn links on the show notes of our podcast, as well as her website. She does programs for different types of professional services organizations, as well as administering the resilience assessments, leading presentations and workshops on the Resilience Library. So make sure you check all this out. I hope you get some great ideas that will help you improve in your business. Thanks for listening. And as always, this show is sponsored by Leopard Solutions, Legal Intelligence, Suite of Products, Firmscape, and Leopard BI. Push ahead of the pack with the power of Leopard. Hey, this is Scott Love with the Rainmaking Podcast. Our guest today is Renee Branson, and we're talking about an interesting topic. Our topic is mental health and the economic impact of rainmakers. Renee, thanks for joining me on the show.
It's great to be with you, Scott.
Now, so let's get some working definitions. When we say mental health, I kind of have an idea of what that is. If somebody asked me to define it, I don't know what I'd say, but how would you say, what are the definitions that we're looking at here with mental health? What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so that is a really big, large umbrella term. Just as if you were to say, what is physical health? Wow, that encompasses a lot, right? And so it encompasses a lot in terms of mental health as well. So this is everything about how we feel about our quality of life, our sense of autonomy and stability. It involves our relational selves, the quality of the relationships in our lives. It also involves the dynamics of poor mental health, whether we're living with a mental illness or we're going through a particular crisis change or challenge that is impacting our well-being. So mental health is a very, very broad topic.
And why has this become top of mind in recent years? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. I think one thing that in recent years, because of the global pandemic that we all just lived through, we noticed really the impact that that was having on all of us across the board. It impacted us in different ways, certainly, but I don't think anyone got through that and said that not in some way, at least, it impacted their mental well-being. Even prior to that, there's been an increasing attention being paid to certain professions, the legal industry being one of them, but certainly that's not the only one, in saying, what impact does the work that we do have on our mental well-being? Mm-hmm. Is the work that we're doing making us sick? Mm-hmm. And if it is, how is that impacting our personal lives? And how is that impacting the business itself?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And isn't it interesting when you talked about COVID? How we went through this big shock. Everybody's at home. And remember back in March, okay, we'll see you in April. We'll see you in 2 weeks. That's what we thought.
Right.
And it wasn't like that. So our world, I mean, we all know, it was shaken. And I remember the conversations when I started reaching out to candidates and with clients, all of a sudden, they were very deep, meaningful conversations.
Yeah.
It seemed like because we all went through this at the exact same time, it became okay to ask a stranger, someone you don't know that well, how are you?
Right.
And people would talk. And it just seemed to have this effect to bond us together because we went through it. And then I remember it was almost like this trend as you start reading LinkedIn postings, all of a sudden it became more okay to talk about the mental health issue related to COVID. It's almost like that was the opener that got us comfortable talking about this. What do you think about
that's
that?
Right. Yeah, I think it put us on a certain level playing field that allowed us to set down the stigma that so often carried around when it comes to mental health. And being able to set that down, set it aside, then allowed us to be able to connect. And it made it more talkable because it was something that we could all in some way relate to. Now, that's not to say we all experienced it the same, right? Obviously, there was a wide variety of how it impacted our lives, but there was still a baseline of commonality. It was a universal, I talked about at the time, a universal trauma. And I don't know that we have in any of our living experience have had something that was a universal trauma.
I don't think so. I know you're right. And what was interesting was that because the crisis cut to the core of all of us, I think it did give us permission to talk about that and not to worry about the stigma because it was so severe. And I think people, the stigma didn't matter as much as let's help each other out. What was interesting, I mentor a kid in DC through a group called Spark the Journey. It was called Capital Partners for Education. And it's professionals in DC mentoring inner city high school kids to get into college. And I remember we had a conference call with all the other mentees that the group put on right after COVID hit. And they were giving us ideas on how to support our mentees. And the questions that we were coached to ask them were, are you in a safe place? Do you have food? Do you have water? And when I heard that, I thought, my goodness, my biggest problem is I can't get to the store to get more bird seed from my backyard.
Right.
And it kind of gave me a whole different perspective that some people are really hurting. And I think it kind of, I think it softened us in a way, to be more aware of how we impact others and especially at work. So I think it's almost like it gave permission for us to kind of be more considerate and to our colleagues, especially in the area of mental health. So what have you seen then in law firms, how this has become more normal, and not necessarily law firms, but any professional services organization, how has it become more acceptable to talk about that? And I kind of wanted to go more into the like the economics like we talked about before.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think so much still needs to be determined, but I've noticed a couple of things. I think you're absolutely right. There was this a softening or a willingness to be vulnerable, which is a terrifying thing for a lot of people and in a lot of industries, but particularly in the legal space, right? Vulnerability just means liability and loopholes.
So right, that's right.
So that's a scary word, but every good thing that we have to allow ourselves to be vulnerable, to take a risk to get that good thing. So vulnerability is powerful. So there has been that. One of the things that I'm still waiting to see, and I don't know that we've discovered it yet, is that when folks have gone through a crisis, challenge, or change, and they are becoming resilient, there's a resiliency from that. It is an openness to not bounce back, which is what we often think about as resilience, because then we're just back where we started, but a bouncing forward. What have I learned? How have I become more adaptable? How have I become more open, more soft in places I need to be soft, and stronger in places I need to be stronger? One thing I don't know is I'm starting to see some evidence that there's a bit of a desire to bounce back. Let's just go back to the way things used to be. I was just reading article about how there are some firms who are, you know, really kind of saying, okay, enough is enough. Everyone needs to be back in the office, right? We're doing away with remote work, for instance.
Yeah.
And I don't have an opinion on whether remote work is good, bad, or the other, but I do wonder when there is that insistence of perhaps even against, you know, against evidence of whether that truly does make a more effective, efficient workplace, that it's just a, let's pretend all of this didn't happen
right. And
get back to the way things were.
Right. I understand. And I also know it depends on the type of leadership. What's the severity of the situation? So there's a lot of variables that affect that. So how do you think it does mental health? How does it impact the economics of rainmakers? Does it keep them from producing? What are the things that a leader in an organization should keep top of mind in terms of the economics related to mental health?
Yeah, great question. There are absolutely economic factors that come into play. If you want to take a look at, for instance, just simple attrition from whatever industry that you are in, if you're seeing rising rates of attrition, that absolutely impacts your bottom line.
Yeah.
I know if you look at the legal space, it is, I think there was one study that said it cost 1.5 times the amount of someone's salary when they left to find a replacement. Now, Scott, I think a little bit more in your domain, you might be able to give even more accurate numbers on that or more current numbers. But if you think about, especially I'm thinking about associates in the legal space and the amount of them that after 5 years leave the profession altogether. And if many of them are leaving because even as associates, they're burning out before they even make it to partner. How much is that, how much is that costing? I read an article a few years ago that kind of crunched some of those numbers. And I probably should have some updated numbers, now that I'm kind of 3 years out from that, to really show the impact of that. I think there are also some other numbers related to that are still kind of the tangible numbers. So we know, for instance, that when there are cases of workplace issues that come up to the bar, whether it's a case of malpractice or something going, something has gone wrong, 40 to 70% of those cases that the bar sees are somehow either related to a mental health challenge and or a substance abuse problem.
Right.
So that person, certainly their career, it's costing the firms that they work with financially. And then there's the less tangible, but still really important that when you have that, you're facing that, especially if there's a firm and that it's happening, more than once, you're talking about a loss of morale. You're talking about a loss of reputation and potentially a loss of clients.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So are there any trends that you've seen, how law firms or other organizations, how they have managed the variable of mental health within the workplace?
Yeah. So there, a few years ago, the American Bar Association created the well-being in law, a well-being pledge for law firms and law schools to sign. Here are some standards that we commit to practicing within our firm. Other professional service organizations have looked at and adopted something similar as well, as have certain associations. I know I served on the Legal Marketing Association's well-being committee, helping them get started, and they have a well-being pledge now. So some really tangible things, saying like, here's what we can do, because it is sometimes, even when we say, gosh, I want to do something, but what? So that gives some tools in the toolkit.
Yeah.
I think also being able to just, again, make it more talkable. And it's really important for leaders of an organization, whether you're a law firm partner, whether you are, a C-suite executive in your company, to lead by example by making it talkable.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's one thing to say, yeah, it's mental health is important, and that's for you all to talk about, right? Because I've got my stuff together. And when in reality, none of us totally have our stuff together, right? That would be like saying, oh, I never get a cold, or I never, you know, get a headache. Sometimes we all have crisis, challenge, or change that we go through that impacts our well-being. That doesn't mean we're suffering from a mental illness. It just means we are a human being having a human experience.
So let me ask you then, in terms of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, where maybe I'm just of a different vintage. I'm 36. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I'm 56 years old. I feel like I'm 26. I'm 56. So, and I went to the Naval Academy and graduated in 1989. That was a different world. Reagan was president when I went to school there, when I started there. And so back then, we didn't talk about things like this. Nowadays, on LinkedIn, people talk about things. How vulnerable should we be? How much should we share without polarizing, alienating people? Does the stigma still exist? Should we just be cautious? What should a leader do in terms of talking about this? What are some of your thoughts in general on that?
Yeah, I think sometimes there can be a good litmus test for how we are vulnerable and what we disclose. And I guess the question that I always ask, if I'm making a decision for myself about whether how I show vulnerability or whether I disclose something, my question is, who and what is this for? Is it to draw connection? Is it to, or is it for, I need to feed some need of my own in a certain situation, in a professional situation. So what's driving this need? Because people can be vulnerable in a way that's actually not vulnerability, but it can be manipulation. So really it's, what's my motivation? What am I really needing and wanting to get out of this? Out of this decision to, you know, disclose or share something. Also, it's really important to understand when we do share our vulnerabilities, when we do disclose something or someone is with us, is that we can do that without doing something that in the field that I'm in called trauma dumping. And so if I've gone through something, so my day job is I run a sexual assault resource agency. And I share very openly that I myself am a survivor. I disclose that. I don't disclose or talk about the details of that.
Right.
At least not in, you know, in certain circumstances, it's maybe appropriate to. And so having that sense of what do I disclose? Or if someone is disclosing something to us and it feels like trauma dumping, it's impacting our mental well-being. To be able to say, I really want to be here for you right now. And I'm not sure if I have this, you know, the capacity, if this is the place, is there some other way I can help you? Or can we get another time? So it is a bit of a dance, but even that dance of how we negotiate with each other, sharing connection and sharing our experiences, that in and of itself connects people.
That's really insightful, Renee. And I appreciate you sharing that. And that gives me some ideas on what should I share? How should I see it when people do that? And it's interesting. I think I've seen some people, like you said, like, well, I'm going to have a marketing campaign and I'm going to exploit my own vulnerability to get more likes and more views on my LinkedIn feed. And I sometimes wonder about that too. What's the motive? Why even put that out there? What's the point? But I also think we have to be careful of how does this represent my ability to solve problems for my clients too? Is that going to bring that into question also? I like the approach that you mentioned. I think it's a really good balance. So let me kind of go a little bit more tactical here then as we bring our time to a close. If there were three action steps that you would recommend giving to somebody in a position of leadership on how to manage this within their organization, what would those three action steps be?
Yeah. Well, I would first of all challenge them to take a look to see what resources are there already out there in your industry. So again, if you're in the legal space, to check out that well-being pledge, to look to see what's already the resources that are already there around you, number one. Number two, I would say don't be afraid to really truly give an opportunity to assess your staff and your attorneys and your other legal professionals. There are a lot of great tools for folks to do self-assessments. I'm not suggesting that people do a self-assessment and then turn it into their boss to say, here's what, but there's something called a pre-qual test, which really just is a self-assessment around someone's resilience and levels of burnout. And so being able to even take a look at what the aggregated results of in your firm or in your company levels of of resilience and burnout. Wow. Yeah. What be a story to see, you know, like, oh gosh, we're doing really great here. What is it that we're doing great? Or, uh-oh, I see some red flags. If I've got, you know, a quarter or more of my staff that are burning out, what does that mean a year down the road when they really flame out? Now I've got, you know, 25% turnover.
Right, right. That's right.
And then I would say the third is to don't be afraid to ask for help as a leader. You're not expected to be and shouldn't be expected to be the expert in the room on this, right? Yeah. I certainly, even though I work with a lot of attorneys, that doesn't make me a legal expert, certainly. I know when to say like, okay, I need some help here. And so it's okay to say, I don't even know where to get started. And so there are those of us out there who can say, all right, we can, you know, we can help shepherd that and sort of reach out and ask for help.
That's great. And I can see leaders and managers in a position of authority that have this responsibility. I can see this being as another reason why their staff is going to be staying at that organization, why they don't want to leave.
Yeah.
Because they know somebody's committed to this. And even if they make an imperfect attempt at this, I think that goes a long way. Just that somebody's taking some time and some action, more than just vocalizing it, but actually doing something and talking about that.
Yeah.
And that this is top of mind for me as a leader, and the door is open. We've got resources here. And if you know, in understanding and even empathizing and listening to people, I found when I was a naval officer, my sailors would complain. And I say, I hear what you say. We're not going to do that. This is what we're going to do. But I heard you. And I know, I want you to know that I heard you. And that's all you needed, was just to listen to people. So anyways, we could continue on with this for hours. Renee, thank you for being here. Tell us about the offerings, the services that you have that you think could be useful for our listeners of our show.
Yeah. So one of the things is I do work with C-suite level folks and law partners, law firm partners, doing exactly what we were just talking about. Really having that you know, building even just kind of one-on-one relationships as they're navigating what they want to see for their organization, and also the working with them on the pressures that they have. Right, is now not only having to care about their own mental well-being, but the weight and responsibility of, to a certain degree, care for a part of their, you know, their team's well-being. So I offer those kind of one-on-one. I like to think of it as executive support, executive advocacy, you know, really being there for them as they're navigating that space. I also do a lot of in-house trainings and workshops, and then longer term working with folks to, when they say, we want to put in place, weave in some policies that bolster well-being. So it's not just this kind of add-on to say, we're going to do a yoga class once a month and a massage chair, you know, in the break room, but really taking a look at the company's policies and saying, where can we strengthen well-being throughout what we do?
That's great, Renee. Well, thank you for being on the show. We're going to put all of your contact information on the show notes. So any of you that are listening, make sure you connect with Renee. We'll put her LinkedIn profile link on there also. Thank you again for sharing your wisdom with us, Renee. This is a very special episode and one that I know that people are going to really appreciate for a very long time. Thank you, Renee.
It was great to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. For more information about our recruiting services for international law firms, visit our website at attorneysearchgroup.com. To inquire about having Scott speak at your next convention, conference, sales meeting, or executive retreat, visit therainmakingpodcast.com.